Hello, everybody. And hello, Craig. How are you?
Hi, Reza. How are you doing?
I'm Reza.
And I'm Craig.
you probably guessed that from me saying, hi, Craig, how are you? But just in case you're a new listener, you're very, very welcome indeed to Aprender Inglés con Reza y Craig. Yes, that's us.
Episode 52.
52.
We're 52 years old.
Wow.
Can you believe
it? Yeah, we're middle-aged.
I actually am this year. Scary. Next month, I'm 52. So I'm as old as our episodes.
Oh, my God. You're as old as you feel, Craig.
Yeah.
As old as you feel. And to me, Aprender Inglés con Reza y Craig still feels fresh and young and youthful.
Teenagers at heart.
Yeah. Yeah, a bit rebellious, but, you know, we're all right. We'll mature quite well. So there may be some unlucky people out there who haven't listened to us before. Don't worry. You can hear all our backdated episodes and catch up on all the amazing grammar, feedback, and general chit-chat that we've been doing for the last 2 years now, is it?
Yeah, it's about 2 years.
But let's get cracking with episode 52.
What does let's get cracking mean?
Let's get cracking. Let's a por ello. Let's go. Let's start what we've got to do.
Vamos por allá.
Craig, let's start with a bit of feedback, shall we?
Let's start with some listener feedback and say hi to Juan Carlos Alumbreros, who listens to us in his car while he's driving to work on his commute. Shall we remind listeners what the commute means? How would you describe commute?
For me, to commute is to travel to work. The typical route, or one of the typical routes that you use frequently to go to work, if you do that, you're commuting.
But do you think there's a connection between living maybe outside a city and working in the center? Because usually it's very expensive to live in the center of Madrid or Barcelona or London or Paris. Mm-hmm. So many people live outside the city in the suburbs where it's cheaper and commute into the center to work.
From the suburbs or even from another town or city altogether.
That's right. So Juan Carlos is a commuter. And he says, thanks a lot for your awesome job to help Spanish people learn English. Your way is different and very addictive.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you, Carlos. I love listening your podcast. Remember the preposition to your podcast when I commute to my job every day. What do you call a man, Reza, from Catalonia who doesn't have a car?
I have no idea.
Carless.
Oh, very good.
Carless. Sorry about that.
Carless, no car. Because the suffix less means without.
Without, senseless, carless, hopeless. Fayo. I think that's this person's name, Fayo. But if it's not, hello, whoever you are. I think it's Fayo who says hello. Before anything, thank you for your amazing work. I'm really enjoying learning with you, and I have a question. Why do some expressions and verbs use up at the end, U-P, up? I don't know when to use it. For example, shut up, built up, meet up, drive up, come up, etc. Yeah. I hope you can help me. Thanks again. Regards, Fayo. So, Reza, why do these words have these phrasal verbs sometimes finish with up? Is there a specific meaning?
Well, Craig, as you've pointed out many times, phrasal verbs are complicated and there are many of them. And one phrasal verb can have many meanings.
That's true.
But on the whole, I'm going to try and categorize up into two basic areas. It can be the meaning of the preposition of movement, up, the opposite of down. Yeah. If you throw a football up into the air or kick it up into the air, it's going up, it's movement.
Yeah.
Yeah. So to go up from the first floor to the fifth floor of a building, you're going up. Movement. It's obvious. But there's another category. this is just my theory, but there will be many exceptions, I'm sure. For me, phrasal verbs up often have the idea of finality.
Yes.
Finalidad.
Completion and termination.
Exactly, completion. All of that. Or using everything. So finality in general, like shut up, like stop talking, no more talking, finality.
Yes.
Or is there any milk in the fridge? No, we've used up all of it.
Yeah, to
use 100%. Mm. Use everything, there's none left. For me, that's a very, very common use of up.
What about a mother saying to her child, eat up, eat your food up, or drink
exactly.
up. Drink
eat up and finish it.
Yeah,
come finish on, it. Use drink all up. Of it, consume all of it.
Complete it, drink yep. it up, and then wash up the dishes.
Mm-hmm. All of them.
Do all of them.
Finish it, yeah.
Another example, I ended up doing all the work. Mm-hmm. That's also termination, completion. I ended up doing it.
Exactly.
What about increase? The idea of something increasing. For example, the price has gone up.
Right.
Mm-hmm. They have raised the price. It's gone up. Or they've put up the price. Mm-hmm. Turn up the music. If you turn mm-hmm. up the TV or turn up the music, then you increase the volume.
Yeah.
Or please speak up. I can't hear you. Speak mm-hmm. up. Increase the sound of your voice. And one more example. I need to pump up the tires on my car. To pump is poner aire mm-hmm. en las ruedas. So to pump up the tires, hinchar, mm-hmm. Is to increase the pressure in the tire.
Uh-huh. What about common phrasal verbs these days to hype up? Something.
Yeah, to hype up. Well, yeah.
How would you define that?
H-Y-P-E. To hype up, to make something more popular, more sensational, maybe give it more importance than it actually has, perhaps. Mm-hmm. Do you agree with that?
Yeah.
There's also the idea of emergence. I don't know how to say that in Spanish. When something emerges or sales de algo. Do you say emergir?
Yeah.
Emergir.
Surgir, maybe, as well.
So the idea of like a pop-up in the internet, if you have a pop-up advertisement, so there's up again, meaning that the advertisement appears or emerges on your screen. You could say, something's popped up on my screen.
What about a pop-up restaurant?
What's a pop-up restaurant?
A restaurant, or indeed any business.
Oh, that suddenly appears.
Appears in a premises, a property, where there was nothing before or something else. And their plan is to open there just for a short time. They're not going to stay there for years, maybe 6 months.
Yeah.
Or a year, that's it, and then they'll go again. That's their plan. It's a pop-up business.
Another bar has popped up in our high street. It's appeared mm-hmm. suddenly. Yeah, yeah. Another example with this idea of emergence, you could say, I'm sorry, Craig, I can't meet you today. Something's come up. Mm-hmm. If something comes up, then something has suddenly happened or emerged.
Algo ha surgido in Spanish.
What's up with you? ¿Qué te pasa?
Exactly.
What's up with you?
What's emerged? What's new? What's the latest thing?
And there's one more kind of area that we could look at with this idea of up with phrasal verbs is construction, the idea of constructing something.
Oh, yes.
We've built up a good relationship. Mm-hmm. We've developed or built a good relationship.
From nothing or for very little, we've made it better and better.
Mm-hmm.
Or set up a business.
I could say water is made up of hydrogen and oxygen. It's composed or constructed of two elements. It's made up of two things.
And if I said to you, my girlfriend takes a long time to make up, what would that be?
Poner maquillaje.
That can also be make up, can't it?
That's right, yeah. But is that the idea of construction?
In a way, yes, it is. Maquillarse.
Yeah, it's true.
Making herself look better, adding to her looks.
Yeah.
And then I could have an argument with my girlfriend. Not my intention. But afterwards, we could make up. That's another meaning of make up.
reconciliarse.
Yes. So yeah. Make up can be maquillarse, or make up can be when you've had an argument to become friends again. See?
Yeah, that's one of the problems with phrasal verbs. There are often more than one use and meaning of each phrasal verb. But I hope that we've helped a little with this idea of up and those main areas. So again, the idea of completion, termination, so eat up, drink up, use up, to emerge, to come out of, like to pop up, something's come up. The idea of increasing, prices go up, they've put up the price, and the idea of construction, composition, we've built up a good relationship, or the council are putting up a new bridge.
Craig, can I leave you with a tricky question to answer?
Go ahead.
And I haven't given them any chance to prepare this. I wouldn't like to have to do it. Explain this, the common phrase, put up or shut up.
I haven't heard that for a while. Put up or shut up. That means do something, actually do something, make an act, do an action, or don't speak. So if somebody's speaking a lot but not doing anything, then you'd ask them to take action. So do it or do something or don't speak. Is that correct?
I think that's a fantastic definition. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Moving on, we have one more piece of feedback, an email from Sonia. Hello, Sonia. Sonia says, hi, Rez and Craig.
Hello, Sonia.
I need your help again. I'd like to know if there is any clue, any trick to know exactly when I should use an infinitive form or an ing form.
Sonia, if only there were. If only there were.
That's the old chestnut.
The old chestnut.
The old chestnut is... What's chestnut? I don't know what
Well, but
is
in Spanish they would have said... chestnut is castaña.
Castaña.
But I don't think the Spanish say
it's
vieja castaña.
Castaña no, vieja.
They don't say that.
In English, an old chestnut is something that keeps coming back. It's like something you've spoken about in the past or done in the past, and it returns again and again and again. It's an old chestnut.
El rollo de siempre.
So el rollo de los Jerusalem. Gerundios y infinitivos, the old chestnut. Well, we did speak about infinitives and gerunds on episode 14. So if you go to inglespodcast.com/14, that's /14, and inglespodcast.com/15. Mm-hmm. In episodes 15 and 14, we spoke about gerunds and infinitives. But Sonia says that my problem with these direct objects that are realized or maybe used by the infinitive in Spanish. And she continues, actually, I've had a problem a few lines above as I couldn't decide between saying to know exactly when to use and to know exactly when using.
Mm-hmm.
So instead she changed and she said to know exactly when I should. Well, for this particular example... it's not correct to say to know exactly when using, is it?
No.
So that's easy for us to that's easy for us to help you. Yeah. To know exactly when to use. So it's when to do something. To know when to go, to know when to speak, to know when to write.
Ah, yes. But hold on. You said it's when plus infinitive. Not always, no. It's to know when plus infinitive.
To know when to do something.
But you can have when plus an ing. For example, right. When painting, take great care not to spill the paint.
Or take great care when painting.
Yeah. So you can have when with an ing. Mm-hmm. It's to know when plus infinitive.
Yeah. You have to know when to say. Yeah.
Or indeed, it's to know plus an infinitive.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. Another example that... Sonia says, I forgot to close the window. I forgot closing the window. Now, I know we've spoken about forgot and remember in the past, haven't we?
Yes. Uh-huh. Well, hold on. They both exist, but with different meanings.
Correct.
Yeah. I forgot to close the window means, let me put it in context. Yesterday, let's give it a time. Yesterday, I forgot to close the window, even though John told me to. Mm-hmm. So yesterday, I did not close the window. The window was not closed. I didn't close it. I forgot to close the window. But a completely different situation. She forgot closing the window last week when she went on holiday. And she was worried on holiday. She thought, did I close the window? Did I not? Oh, God, I hope I closed it, because if not, rain might get into my house. She forgot closing it. That means she didn't have a memory of closing it. But she may have closed it, and maybe she didn't, but she forgot closing it. She couldn't, in her imagination or her memory, picture herself doing it.
So it's the memory that she forgot and not the action.
Exactly. Mm. So forget plus ing is about having a memory of something. And forget plus infinitive is actually forgetting to physically do the action.
So another example could be, I went out last night and had too much to drink. I got completely drunk. Mm-hmm. I don't remember getting home.
Yes, it's a very common sentence. You got home, but if I asked you how, taxi, bus, on foot, you'd say, Reza, I don't know. I forget getting home.
Yeah, there was a girl lying next to me. I don't remember meeting her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We don't advise this, readers, by the way. Not a good idea.
It's only an example.
Yeah. Did I say readers? Listeners, I should say. The thought of a woman lying in a bed has made me confuse reading and listening.
You're blushing.
God. So that's for forget and for remember. Okay. That's one difference. But as far as I can see, Craig, there's no fixed rule about ings and infinitives. Some verbs always go with infinitive. Some always go with ing. Some can go with either with different meanings. And some can go with either with the same meaning.
I have a feeling we'll be returning to gerunds and infinitives in future podcasts. So keep listening, and we will keep trying to help you with the difficult area of English grammar. We will come back to gerunds and infinitives, and I'll do some research and try to make it easier to use gerunds, when to use gerunds,
yes,
and when to use infinitives.
Keep listening, Craig said. Keep plus ing, always.
Yep, so it's keep plus gerund. Keep listening and keep studying. One final thing from Sonia. She finds difficulty in using sentences in Spanish, we use an infinitive as the complement of the verb to be. Mi intención es ganar. So my intention is to win, or my intention is winning. Yeah. She said both sentences sound odd to me. The word odd, O-double-D, means strange, unusual, raro. But they are both correct, aren't they, Reza?
They're both correct.
Yeah, you can say either or either.
And what about if we reverse the order of the sentence, Craig? What about in Spanish as well? What if we wanted to say, ganar es mi intención? Would you use an infinitive or an ing at the beginning of the sentence?
I would probably use the gerund, because it's more common as the subject of the sentence, using the gerund. So
you would say,
winning is my intention, in the same way that smoking is dangerous or shopping can be expensive. So you'd make the gerund the subject of the sentence, put it first in that example.
But it's certainly not wrong to say to win is my intention. You can also say that. You can also begin with an infinitive.
You can also begin a sentence with an infinitive, as Shakespeare did.
As he said,
to be or not to be, that is the question.
But Craig, I would say that there is a case where there is a situation in which you must use ing. And that is when you're talking about in general. As you said, smoking will kill you eventually. Maybe. Okay, sorry. Let me rephrase that. We may have some smokers who listen to us. Okay, I'm sorry. It may not kill you, but you know, there's a fair chance. I don't want to be anti-smoking. Let's say smoking may kill you. You know, be careful. It may kill you, smoking. To smoke, no, doesn't work there. To smoke may kill you is not correct.
No.
Because we're talking about smoking in general.
Yeah.
And when you're talking about in general, it must be ing. Smoking in general is bad for you. Smoking in general may kill you.
Which, by the way, is also the reason there's no article. You wouldn't say the smoking, because it's not a particular, it's just smoking in general. And when we speak about things in general, we don't use the article the.
But in Sonia's example, ing and infinitive are possible because she's not talking about in general. She's talking about a specific intention. Tomorrow at the football match, that's specific. My intention is to win. It's specific. Or my intention is winning. They're both correct. You can use ing or infinitive when it's specific. But when it's general, only ing as far as I can see.
Yeah, that's right. Let's move on to a question from Alberto from Madrid. And Alberto says, what's the difference between England, Britain, Great Britain and the UK?
Craig, can I copy you like a parrot? That old chestnut.
Well,
we've talked about this before.
It's a common question, isn't it, from students? But I don't think we've spoken about this on the podcast. So let's talk about it. For example, what's the difference between...
We've definitely talked about
the
difference
We've talked about the flags.
With flags and Great Britain Banderas. And UK a little bit. Oh, and remember? Because somebody...
But did we actually say exactly, speak about the geography and...
I'm not sure. Somebody asked about the flag of Northern Ireland. Do you remember?
That's it.
And since
that's
I'm
right.
from Northern Ireland, I was able to tell them.
Yeah.
And so we touched upon it. We mm-hmm. touched upon it or touched on it, but perhaps we didn't go into the full details.
Well, let's start by asking you this question, Reza. What's the difference between British and Northern Irish?
You can be both. Indeed, I am.
Mm-hmm.
I am Northern Irish and I am British. Craig is English and he is British. Great Britain is composed of England, Scotland and Wales.
England, Scotland and Wales. Okay.
That's Great Britain.
Okay. And the UK, the United Kingdom.
You add Northern Ireland. In fact, listeners, if you Google images at a British passport, Google images of a British passport, a modern British passport, and it, regardless, that means it doesn't matter where you come from in the United Kingdom. On the front of the British passport, it says the United Kingdom of Great Britain and Northern Ireland. Even if you're from London and you've never been in Northern Ireland
That's
in your
true.
Life and you don't care about it, it says that on your passport.
That's
to
true.
Make it very clear.
Yeah.
You know?
And then, of course, there's Ireland, which is a separate country. And that's, if you look at the map of Ireland and Northern Ireland, that's the southern bit, the south.
Ooh, Ireland and Northern Ireland. Now you're getting into very tricky territory because then it gets political. It gets political and we get into historical questions because technically you can divide Ireland into two parts with Northern Ireland in the north, and the Republic of Ireland is the rest of the island. And technically, they're two different countries. However, and it's a very big however, many people refuse to accept that there are two countries. They're not happy about that fact. And as far as they're concerned, Ireland is Northern Ireland, the Republic of Ireland, they're all one, and they would prefer there not to be a border.
That's a good point. But I'm thinking of the person who's asking the question, a typical Spanish student, for example, Alberto, who's thinking, well, if I say, are you Irish? I mean, if you say you're Irish.
I am.
You are Irish.
I'm Irish and Northern Irish.
And Northern
and
Irish.
And British. Why not?
So it does get complicated.
Yes. I have friends, and I know plenty of people from Belfast in Northern Ireland who refuse to call themselves Northern Irish. That's fine.
They're just Irish.
They're Irish because they would rather not be part of the United Kingdom, mm-hmm. and they don't want to be considered as Northern Irish. As far as they're concerned, Belfast should be every bit as Irish as Dublin, so they're Irish. And that's how they define themselves, and not British.
And a Welshman is Welsh and
British.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And a Scotsman is Scottish and British.
Yeah. This is all technically true, but of course it depends on the individual. There are plenty of Scots who don't want to be British and Welsh people who don't want to be British.
And there are plenty of Catalonians who don't want to be Spanish.
Yes.
I mean, it's the old chestnut, isn't
yeah.
it?
Technically, they are Spanish, although they might say they aren't. And the Basque country as well.
So a Scottish person could also be called a Scot.
Mm-hmm.
And the word blighty, B-L-I-G-H-T-Y, does that mean anything to you?
Oh, yes.
Blighty? What does that mean?
Yes. Blighty could be just England or it could be the United Kingdom. The term comes from the First World War, I think, or roundabout. Blight is an old-fashioned word for something unpleasant or an injury. So in the First World War, when people were blighted with something, they were given an injury. In a way, they were happy if it meant they could then go back to the United Kingdom and escape the horror of the trenches of the First World War. Mm-hmm. So some soldiers used to talk about getting a blighty, getting an injury, which was good enough to, it was a severe enough blight to get you back to England.
So maybe they'd shoot themselves in the foot.
Occasionally, yeah.
Yeah.
So from there, this blighty became associated with the country of England itself. So, oh, you've got a blighty, or you're going back to England. So eventually this transformed into England being called blighty. That's how I understand
it. I didn't know that. So yeah, blighty is a common expression to speak about the UK. What about the differences between Spanish, Latino, and Hispanic?
Well, it depends if you're American or not. If you're American, there's either you don't... For many Americans, your definition is different or you just don't know and you possibly don't care.
Because a Spanish person is from the Spanish mainland.
As far as I'm concerned, yeah.
Yes.
But for a lot of Americans, they technically incorrectly say Spanish for anyone who speaks Spanish. But that's not really correct. So they say, I'm going to the Spanish quarter of Chicago. The place where the Cubans, Colombians, Mexicans live. But there won't be many Spanish people there.
They're different nationalities with one language in common.
Yeah, that's how Americans often use the word Spanish. But technically that is incorrect, isn't it?
Yeah.
I would call that the Hispanic quarter.
The Hispanic quarter.
Yeah.
Yeah. And obviously the American and North American. I actually looked at this. North America... is Canada, the US.
And Mexico.
Greenland.
Greenland as well, wow.
Mexico, Guatemala.
All right.
Cuba, Nicaragua, El Salvador, Costa Rica, Haiti, Dominican Republic, Honduras, Puerto Rico, Jamaica, and more. There's so many countries in North America, and I did not know.
I didn't either.
Yeah.
I thought it was just... America. When I say America, I mean the United States.
Well, we do, don't we? We say, yeah, America, thinking, oh, that's the U.S., is it 52 states, are there, of the United States of America? But it's so much more.
Yeah. Yeah. I know that many Hispanic people from Central and South America, sometimes feel offended whenever we talk about Americans, but we exclude them because they feel, well, hold on, I'm from South America. I'm an American.
Exactly.
Americana. And they're right, I guess.
Yeah.
But
or even from North America, like from Mexico, and not being considered as part of the Americas.
Yep. In modern English, American has become a synonym for from the United States.
Yes.
It shouldn't be, but that's what has happened.
Yeah, it's a shame. We have a question from Mara from Valencia. I think it's the Mara that we know. Mara, hello. Mara says, we have a question for you. I listened to a friend saying, I have time to spare. For me, the meaning of this expression is different from saying, I have time to waste. But he said that it's the same. Is this true?
I don't think it's the same.
And could you explain the difference between to spare time and to waste time?
There is
a very clear difference, isn't there?
What's the difference?
If you have time to spare, then you have extra time. You have free time. Mm-hmm. And waste definitely has a negative connotation, a negative meaning. Waste is malgastar. So if you waste time, you spend it in a very negative way. Yeah. For example, I wasted time playing video games all afternoon. But to have spare time is to have extra time to do something, to have tiempo libre. Do you agree?
Yes, although I would add something, that to have time to waste can be said in a jocular way, in a joking way. So you said it's for something negative, yeah? Or to imply that you're going to do something silly. Not really bad, but silly. It's like, Craig, would you like to come to the train station with me and go train spotting, which is a very British thing to do, to look at trains and write down the serial number. It sounds incredible, but people do. And you would say, yeah, why not? I've got time to waste. You're not trying to insult me, but you're kind of implying it's a silly thing to do. Silly. Yeah. It's not terrible, but it's silly. But you've got time to waste. Yes, listeners, train spotting is a British hobby.
Yeah, but not a common one.
Not a common one. No.
They're also called anoraks, aren't they? People who spot trains.
So I would say that sometimes it's just for fun. People say, yeah, I've got time to waste. You know? But it's entirely different if somebody says to you, don't waste my time, then they're being very serious. It's like, I'm not amused at this, you know, don't waste my time. That's serious.
Can also be a noun. He's a time waster. He's wasting our time, or she's a time waster.
What other things can you have spare?
You can have a spare key, which is an extra key. I have a spare microphone in case one of these microphones stops working. You can have spare batteries in the in your drawer.
Spare bedroom is a common thing.
Spare bedroom, yeah.
Yep. An extra one ready for use if necessary.
Yes, exactly. Elisa has... hello, Elisa. She has a comment and some questions for us. Elisa says, what winds me up... because he's obviously been listening to our weekly wind-ups, is when people arrive late to an appointment.
Oh, shit, Elisa. It's probably a good thing you haven't met me.
People can be 30 minutes or an hour late, and this drives me crazy.
Well, come on, Craig. I'm not that bad, though. No. I often keep Craig waiting to record these podcast sessions. Today we were to meet at 11 and I got here at about 6 minutes past 11.
So you only kept me waiting for 6 minutes. That's no...
But it's late.
Yeah, but...
In Valencia or in Spain in general, those 6 minutes are virtually irrelevant. It's as if they don't exist. But to a British person, or perhaps to a Finn or a German, they can be very annoying, 6 minutes. Yeah, Craig, were you very annoyed?
No.
Were you mildly annoyed?
No. It doesn't bother me. It bothers me if I'm waiting, for example, outside the cinema or outside a restaurant, and people arrive very late. It doesn't bother me if I'm at home because I'll just do something else. I'll do another thing. And it also depends what we're going to do. Obviously, if you're going to be late for the theater, something that's going to start at a particular time, it's annoying. It really is. But one thing that does wind me up, one thing that I can't stand, and that's people who use their children as an excuse.
Oh, yes.
Now, I don't have children, and I am very sympathetic to people who have very busy and hectic lives, and they should perhaps leave earlier. I mean, if they know that it's going to take half an hour more to get the children ready with their shoes and their clothes, then they should plan to leave half an hour earlier. So I don't buy the excuse of having children as a reason for being late.
Craig, I take your point.
That's quite controversial, I know.
Yes,
that's
it is.
Polemical, controversial.
I take your point, Craig. But then, you know, children do unpredictable things. And sometimes a parent...
Another reason for leaving earlier.
I guess, yeah.
Public transport is very unpredictable. We'd leave earlier.
But what do you do if your child says... just as you're about to leave, oh, mummy, oh, daddy, I feel really sick. Something's wrong with me. You can't just leave. You don't want to just leave them. It might be something serious.
Well, then you'd have to cancel, wouldn't you? You'd have to put off or postpone. To put off is postpone the engagement, the appointment. Yeah. Anyway, Lisa continues and says, it would be nice to hear your opinions about students now and students 15 years ago. Uh-huh. Are people better at learning English? Well, she says better to learn English. It would be better at learning English. Remember, with expressions like to be good at something, to be bad at something, to be better at or to be worse at something.
Or fantastic at, or brilliant at, yeah,
or
terrible
at, that preposition at. So are people better at learning, always have a gerund after the preposition, at learning English now than earlier, and are they learning quicker? And what about grammar? Is it any easier for people to learn or understand it now? Are people still shy? Shy means timido.
Yes.
When it comes to talking. And what about pronunciation? Has it become better because of the internet and many voice applications and software? Well, some good questions.
Very good questions.
Well, any thoughts? Is it? I mean, we've been teaching 20 years each, yep. I think. We've got about 40 years between us of experience. Do you think it's getting easier for students to learn? Is our job easier than it was 20 years ago?
I don't think our job is easier, but I don't think it's harder either. I think there are more resources for serious students to learn. So if you're a serious student, if you're going to work hard, perhaps it's easier now to progress more quickly because of all the resources, internet and all sorts of other things.
Yeah, we gave some examples in the last podcast about websites where you can practice your speaking online for free.
Verbling
and iTalki, and obviously Mansion Inglés has free courses. There are many, many good websites and podcasts like this one that you can listen to for no cost and improve your English. So I think the resources now are incredibly more advanced than they were before. But our job as teachers, I don't find it easier.
No, it isn't. I don't think it is.
People are still shy. Maybe people are becoming more shy because of social media, because of mobile phone use. They're not used to talking as much. There's not that face-to-face conversation that there was before mobile phones and technology.
Now, Craig, you've hit on a raw nerve for me. To hit on a raw nerve is an expression which means you've...
Tocar los narices.
Los narices, o tocar...
Los nervios.
Un tema delicado. It's a delicate topic, something which can cause great controversy.
Tocar los huevos.
No, tocar los huevos is annoying. No, you haven't annoyed me. But you've touched a raw nerve. It's something which I have to deal with every week. So it's something which is often on my mind and it troubles me. The use of mobile phones in the classroom. Now, I'm going to be a bit controversial. Many of the listeners aren't going to like what I'm going to say. I am not in favor of using mobile phones in a classroom. Use mobile phones with apps, of course, at home, do anything you like, but in the classroom, no, unless it's for very specific things. For example, you have a dictionary on your mobile phone. Okay, that's okay, that's okay. But I find week in, week out, it never changes, there are some students who abuse this. They will look at emails, they will look at WhatsApp, they will look at silly things on YouTube,
so it's
which have
it's
nothing to do with the class, in my class.
So you object to the distractions of the devices in the class. Oh, that's I agree with you there. I agree with you. But I'm reluctant. Reluctant is I don't want to. I feel bad about asking students to turn off the mobile phones because they're such useful devices for learning languages. Right. They can record the lesson on their mobile phone and listen to it again after. They can take photographs of the whiteboard so they don't, it's not necessary to write notes. They have photographs that
ooh,
it's much quicker.
Stop. A huge issue.
I do this.
Me
I
too.
Do it.
Me too, Craig, but not necessary to write notes. Oh, cuidado, be careful there.
Or maybe write the notes when you get home into your notebook.
Uh-huh. It's not necessary.
And then you can listen to the teacher more.
But I have taught students, particularly from Asian countries. Now, this isn't a question of racism, but in Asian countries, a lot of young people are very, very obsessed with technology. Very obsessed. in Korea, China, places like that. And they may be good students in many ways, but they can't write to save their lives because they don't write.
They're not used to
always it. Taking pictures, this, that, and the other. Oh, great. Yeah, you'll remember. But because they never write, they can't write, some of them. You ask them to write an essay, it's like, oh, God, I've only ever taken a picture of things on the board before my mobile, but I've got to write it now. They can't do it.
Well, maybe
psychologists have researched into this, and it's fairly conclusive. This is recent research that writing notes by hand, by the way, not even on a computer, but writing notes by hand makes you remember what you've written more. And it doesn't matter if you're a person who uses a computer 15, 20 hours a day in your work or pleasure. Even if you're that type of person, writing notes by hand makes you remember them better. It's been proven by research. So good old handwriting, it's boring if you do it all the time, but it's good for long-term memory of a language. It's been proven.
So there you have it. You've heard it first on inglespodcast.com. Don't lose the habit. Don't get out of the habit of writing notes by hand. It will help you learn English faster. Let's move on to speak about some vocabulary before we finish today. And we have a message from John from Buenos Aires. So we have another listener in Argentina. Hello, John. He says, I'm going to travel to California in August. Could you talk about travel vocabulary? For example, how do you ask for some place to arrive by car? I think he means how to get to places by car, how to get to places. Also, how to order in a restaurant, how to shop, etc. John says, I listen to you every day and I'm thinking to do.
Uh-oh. Thinking about doing.
Or thinking of doing.
Or yeah. Thinking of, right.
I'm thinking of doing it at night while I'm sleeping.
Osmosis. Listening to us when you're sleeping?
Yeah, well, I know we may put you to sleep. We may send you to sleep.
Yeah.
But anyway, thanks for your message, John. Yeah. So what I thought...
John, already I've met a few girls in my life who tend to sleep when I'm talking. I'm quite used to it, but I never a listener from the podcast before.
And quite a few of my students seem to sleep when I'm speaking as well. But I thought we could perhaps look at some of that today, and then in future episodes we could look at the shopping and the other questions. So let's look at asking for directions today and concentrate on that. Then next week, eating out, and then how to shop in future episodes. So if you go back to episode 50 of Inglés Podcast, where Reza and I spoke with Nicola, you will notice that we spoke about indirect questions, those polite questions you should use when speaking to a stranger, for example, when asking for directions. And that's inglespodcast.com/50, episode 50. So, for example, you would say, instead of saying, where's the bank, you'd say, do you know where the bank is? Or do you know how to get to, como llegar, how to get to the bank? Do you know how to get to the supermarket?
Or can you tell me how to get to the bank, please?
Yes, remember the please. Always try to remember to say please at the end of your question.
Yeah. Don't translate directly from Spanish into English for directions a lot of the time. It's not polite enough in English.
That's like you said, that example in episode 50 of someone who stopped you, yeah, who was in a car and said, estación.
Yeah. Oye, jefe, la estación, jefe. Hey, boss, station.
Yeah, you would have to be more polite in English and say something like, excuse me.
Excuse me, sir.
Can you tell me where the station is, please? Could you tell me where the station is, please? And then, of course, we have directions. So go straight or go straight on or keep going. Then there's turn right, gira, turn right, turn left. Or more common in American English, you'd say take a right.
Mm-hmm.
Take a right, take a left at the traffic lights, los semáforos.
Mm-hmm.
Another one, it's the first on the right, it's the first on the left, it's the second on the right, it's on your right, it's on the left, it's on the right-hand side. Maybe you hear go across the lights. Lights are semaphores, so go across the lights. Are they called lights in American English?
Yeah.
Or stop signs? But roundabout is a UK word. It's a British English word, a roundabout, which in Spanish is...
Rotonda.
Rotonda.
There's a good reason why it's a British word.
Because you go round about.
But
the roundabout.
British word. Because in America, they don't have any, as far as I know.
They say traffic circle.
Oh, they do have some.
They say traffic circle in the US.
Some.
Yeah.
But not many.
Not very common. No,
they don't have many.
No, not very common, but there's a different expression.
They prefer old-fashioned junctions. There's a good word as well.
Mm-hmm.
A junction, a place where roads cross.
Exactly. Yeah.
They prefer that in America.
Other useful expressions, how far is it? How do you say that in Spanish? How far is it? ¿Está lejos?
No, but how far? ¿A qué distancia es?
¿A qué distancia es?
¿Está?
How far is it? Or how long will it take?
Mm-hmm.
How long will it take? How many kilometers is it, approximately? How many kilometers? So you know how far to go. How far is it? Is it very far? Is it far?
Or the opposite, is it nearby or is it near?
Is it near? Is it close to here? Is it near here? That's difficult to say. Near here.
Near
here. The two diphthongs, the two double vowel sounds, ear, ear. Near here. Is it near here? Try saying that three times quickly. Is it near here? Is it near here?
Is it near here? We sound a bit odd.
Is it near here?
We better edit this out, Craig.
Or is it far? Is it? Yeah, I'll edit this out. Don't worry. So any other expressions that come to mind for Juan or John, who's going to California?
I think we've covered all the essentials.
How far is it?
Here's one which can be useful for when you get lost, because we all get lost sometimes, and then you correct yourself. Sometimes you have to go back on yourself. It's quite a useful expression. If you've gone too far in one direction, then you have to go back on yourself. That means go back in the direction you originally came from.
Return, yeah.
Yep.
Have you heard the expression do a U-E?
Yes, do a U-turn.
Do a U-turn.
Do a U-turn.
A U, the letter U, if you think of the letter U, the shape, that means go back on yourself because you U-turn. You turn in a U-shape.
Mm-hmm.
Do a U-E. Anyway, moving on, weekly wind-ups. Do you have a weekly wind-up this episode, Reza?
I do. It's very simple. It won't take long.
Oh, sorry. Let's just quickly explain for people who are listening the first time. A weekly wind-up is where Reza and I speak about things that annoy us, things that bother and irritate us. Fastidiar, disgustar o molestar. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, it won't take long because I'm sure I'm in good company. I'm sure there are millions of people around the world who share this one. Simply, civil servants who are out having a coffee, tomando un café, or lo que sea, when they're supposed to be at their place of work, attending to the public.
So let's clear. It's not civil servants in general you're...
No, civil servants in general, fine. Some of them do a great job. Civil servants who... seem to be often...
Constantly.
On a coffee break. When they're supposed to be at work, it's not that it's their coffee break time. They have a coffee break time as well, but when they're supposed to be working, they're also having a coffee break. And you ask for the person in charge of whatever, and another civil servant, a colleague of yours, will say, no, I'm afraid he's out having a coffee. He'll be back soon. Not good enough. Not good enough. They're paid to be there.
Has that happened to you recently?
Yeah. It happened at a train station. I wanted to get, sort something out to do with a ticket. But no, they were having a coffee, but they weren't supposed to be. So what? I hang around. I go.
What does hang around mean?
Hang around. Estar por ahí. And then I'm going to be late for work, you know, because they're making me late when they're getting paid. It's not on. I find it unacceptable.
How long did you wait on that particular occasion?
About 10 minutes.
Yeah.
Wasted time.
Mm. No, I agree. Absolutely.
Because you and I, we're paying them. Because if they're a civil servant, then as far as I'm concerned, it's my money.
Taxpayers' money.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Totally agree.
What about you? What's your wind-up?
Website pop-ups. We spoke about pop-ups in the previous episode, in episode 51. That's Inglés Podcast /51. But pop-ups are the annoying advertisements that pop up or suddenly appear on your computer screen. And also, I noticed on the mobile phones now, they're starting to happen, that distract you from what you're trying to look at. And they seem to be very, very popular with many websites now. And I know you can get software to block these pop-up advertisements, but that's another thing you have to download, another piece of software to stop the software that's disturbing you. So it's just getting very annoying, these advertisers who are doing whatever they can to get in front of your eyes. And I notice it's happening on the TV too. You're watching a film or you're watching a football match or something interesting on the TV, and an advertisement for something pops up on half or three quarters of the screen.
Yep.
And it's distracting. It just annoys me, and it really bothers me.
Me too, and I think we're not alone.
If you have something that winds you up and bothers you, please let us know. You can send us a sound file with a voice message at inglespodcast.com. And of course, you can send us an email with your comments and questions and wind-ups. Send out your emails to Craig at inglespodcast.com or to Reza at belfastreza@gmail.com. And remember, you can also sign up to our email list at inglespodcast.com, and we will send you an email every month with a resume, with a summary of all of our podcasts that month. Good news! We have some good news for you. We now have a Patreon program to give you what you're asking for. Many, many people have been asking us for full episode transcriptions of Aprender Inglés con Reza y Craig. So we need $100 or 100 euros per month to be able to pay a service to transcribe our show. So if 100 of you listeners give $1 or 1 euro each per month, that's less than the price of a cup of coffee, then we can do it. We can pay a service to write the transcriptions and publish them on our website. So how about you? Will you help Reza and I improve our podcast? If you donate a euro each month, we also promise to answer your questions about English. So we will answer questions of everyone who donates and supports us on Patreon. Of course, you can donate more than 1 euro if you want to. Just go to patreon.com/inglespodcast. That's Patreon, patreon.com/inglespodcast. And thank you very much for listening and for supporting our podcasts. So until next episode, it's a huge goodbye from me.
And it's cheerio from me.
Until next time, thank you for listening, and we'll see you soon. The music in this podcast is by Pitts. The track is called See You Later.